I'd like to thank you for joining our webinar today, Preparing for the Sale of Your Closely Held Business, presented by Steve Young. For those of you who don't know Steve, he has been with UBS since 2014 after spending time at Merrill Lynch and JP Morgan's private wealth. Steve came to wealth management with over 23 years of commercial business banking. As such, his career here at UBS has gravitated towards working with owners of closely held and family-owned businesses. He created the Business Transition Consultants team here at UBS to provide guidance to business owners across the country, helping them maximize their personal wealth, as well as growth, management, and eventually exit with their companies. So without further ado, let me turn the mic over to Steve and begin this webinar. Thanks so much.
Thank you for taking time out of your afternoon to spend a little bit of time with us. I'm going to try to be as efficient as I can with time, but I got a lot to cover, and we're going to cover a lot of different things as quickly as I can, but I do want to make sure everybody knows that if you're on the call today, my contact information I have in the bottom right-hand corner of this screen. Unfortunately, our protocol on these webinars do not allow us to take live questions, but if you have a question, feel free to email me and I'll take a look at them before we're done here just to make sure we cover everything. And if I don't get to it before our time is up, I will definitely reach out to you following the meeting today. Everybody on the call, if you are interested, we will be providing you with an opportunity. If you want to schedule a 1-hour consultation about your specific situation, we'd be more than happy to do that as well. So to get started, who is this webinar for? Basically, if you are running a middle market family-owned or closely held company and you're considering exiting your business in the next 1 to 5 years, you've come to the right place. If you're not sure about your options and the process to discreetly bring your company to market, we'll touch on that as well. If you're interested in maximizing your after-tax results from the monetization of your company in order to provide for your long-term financial viability through the sale of your company, you've come to the right place. If you're concerned about the continuation of your enterprise after the exit, worried about building and protecting family wealth, and hoping to leave a meaningful legacy for the people and causes you're passionate about, you've come to the right place. So we're going to be touching on all these things. What to expect for the next 45 minutes or so, spending time with me today, we're going to identify the components that should be considered when you're making a decision about when and how to exit your company. Now, when I talk about exiting this afternoon, I'm also basically interchanging the word retirement. So if you're looking at exiting your company to retire, if you need to sell to make that happen, that's what we're going to be focusing in on. We're going to identify the steps that the UBS Business Transition Consulting Group can assist with. That is the team that I run here at UBS. And we're going to provide you with an opportunity, as I said earlier, to schedule a 1-hour consultation to help assess your situation and possibly give you some specific customized ideas for your particular needs. We'll also, if you're interested, we can provide you with access to our curated boutique investment, our list of investment bankers and private equity firms as well. Okay, so if you're thinking about exiting your company, there's a lot of things that go into that decision, right? You know, things like, is it the right time for me to exit? Sometimes there's a health issue. Sometimes you're just tired of running your company. Sometimes it's the age thing. You want to travel, maybe reap some of the benefits of all those long hard hours that you've put into the company over many, many years, and it's just time for you to retire. But is it the right time? Is it the right time for your company to be exiting, for you to be exiting? What are your options? How do you do this efficiently? And who can you trust to be part of the process? What about if it's not the right time now, how do we make proactive steps to get us to that point in sometime in the future? So with those questions, there's a lot of decisions and a lot of processes that need to go into coming up with the right information, the right data points so that you can make a good quality decision. And I'm listing a few here on the right side of the screen. You need a business valuation. You need a quality of earnings assessment. You need to be able to assess the readiness of your enterprise, understand what the economic factors are leading you to, you know, as far as the economy, is it the right time from an economic standpoint? What about your specific industry? What are your options? Do you want to just close up and liquidate? Do you want to gift or sell to your family? Maybe you want to sell to your employees or look for a strategic buyer or private equity firm to come in and put money into the business so you can capitalize and grow it and sell it into the future? Or do you want to look at partnering with a family office? You can always do this on your own. You could accept an unsolicited offer. I'm sure everybody on this phone call today, everybody on this webinar is getting phone calls, you know, weekly about people wanting to buy your company. Those I would consider to be unsolicited offers. You can enlist the help of a business broker or an investment banker. And if it's not the right time to sell, there's a number of proactive things you can do to optimize the valuation of your company into the future. And we'll talk a little bit about that as well. But aside from the business evaluation, things on the business side of the ledger, you need to be thinking about from a personal standpoint, is your wealth situation identified? Have you gone through an analysis to see what exactly you need in order from a personally financial standpoint to maximize the probability of successfully living out the rest of your life and not running out of money? Have you done a personal cash flow analysis? Have you looked at your longevity planning and legacy planning? Have you assessed your risk tolerance? What are you going to do with the capital that you raise from the sale of your company? How is that going to be invested? Is it going to line up with your goals and your specific tolerance for risk in the marketplace? You also got to be looking at more advanced planning scenarios, such as estate planning, gifting, philanthropy, and of course, how to mitigate taxes. And then who would you want to have as part of your team to help you evaluate these things? Obviously, I'm a little biased, but I'm going to put the wealth advisor at the top of the list, and I'll come back to reason why I say that. But you need a good CPA tax advisor. You need a good deal attorney, a good estate attorney, probably an insurance advisor, an evaluation specialist. So there's a lot of people that need to be involved in the transaction or the analysis side of the transaction to help you make a good, wise decision. I'm going to talk a little bit about from my perspective, just to take a step back. UBS is the largest wealth management firm on the planet. The reason we're talking today is because my particular team focuses on helping unlock or establishing wealth for business owners, owners of closely held or family-owned businesses, primarily in that middle market space, companies with EBITDAs of north of $2 million on up. And from what I've seen, the transactions we've worked with in the past, and we do several of these a year, working with clients that are going through the transition of ownership. Normally, this is kind of the cycle or the process that I see going through to come up with a decision. First, it starts with the owner saying, hey, I'm ready to do this. Secondly, we're going to look at the valuation of the business. Is it ready? Is it attractive? Third, we're going to look at what the economy is telling us is going on. And then lastly, we'll look at the personal side of the equation to figure out if this is all going to fit. And I'm going to take a real quick detour and tell you, a lot of times I use the analogy of being invited to a party, right? So the party starts at 8 o'clock in the evening and it ends at midnight. And so at 8 o'clock, the bankers, the accountants, the lawyers, they all show up for the party. And then at 11:45, somebody goes, where's the wealth advisor? So they call the wealth advisor, hey, you better get over here. The party's about to end. So wealth advisor gets to the party at 12 o'clock, the lights go on, everybody goes home, and it's just the owner and the wealth advisor with a broom trying to clean up the situation and making sure there's longevity and everything's put in order so that on the next day and every day after that, things are in the right place. So we're going to talk a little bit about reordering this in a minute, but let's go down the traditional route of decision making here. So normally what happens when we start to look at the business and trying to decide if this is the right time to go to market, I see a lot of times owners are leaving money on the table. And the reason why that happens in most cases is there's not been a proactive approach to valuing the company before the decision is made to go to market. And what happens is you're not creating what we call competitive tension. You're not really having like a litmus test for the valuation. So sometimes I'll see people take deals that they really shouldn't be taking because it sounds good, but there's not been that valuation there. Sometimes what I see happening is a seller will end up working with the wrong buyer and getting the wrong deal structure. When I say wrong, it's not optimized for the best outcomes. A lot of times you'll see inexperience or there is no deal advisor in the transaction at all, and the seller is trying to do this on their own. And I can go through a number of horror stories that we have been a witness to where owners of companies have tried to sell their company on their own. And I would say 99 out of 100 times, it doesn't end very well. So that's also an opportunity for leaving money on the table. Focusing on the deal and neglecting the business. So again, spending too much time trying to get the transaction put together and taking their eye off the ball as to what's actually creating value, and that is sales, operation, expense management, personnel, etc. So taking the eye off the business and focusing on trying to get this deal done And sometimes that when that happens, the deal transaction takes longer and longer to happen because the results of the company start to deteriorate because the owner is not really focused in on doing what they need to be doing on a day-to-day basis. Not taking a look and evaluating all the different options. And we're going to talk about the different types of options that are out there to transition ownership in a minute, but looking at only one option and not understanding if there might be a better way to maximize the deal for the owners. And then not incorporating tax planning and estate planning and wealth planning on the front end of the transaction. A lot of times we get called into a scenario where somebody's already got a term sheet and a deal on the table and getting ready to go to closing, and they need, you know, our team to come in and help manage the liquidity after the transaction is put in place. But then there's just not enough time to do some proactive tax planning and structuring from an estate standpoint to maximize the value of that wealth after the transaction closes. All of these things are contributing factors for leaving money on the table, and these are things that we want to help owners avoid. So, real quick on unsolicited offers. I'm really worried about when somebody calls me and says, hey, you know, my client just got an offer for his company. Can you meet with him? And we're happy to do so. But a lot of times when there is an unsolicited offer to buy your company or sell a company, what happens is the seller inadvertently defers to the buyer's process. So they're at the whelm of the buyer's transaction terms deal. There's no validation of value, as we spoke about a few minutes ago, perhaps to the detriment of looking at other options to transition the ownership, and maybe not even the right time to be selling or the value of the number and leaving money on the table. And then there's generally the wealth planning, the tax mitigation, and estate planning tend to fall to the back of the bus. It's an afterthought instead of a forethought. Let's talk about whether or not the business is ready to go to market. Okay, so the first thing you need to understand, obviously, is, you know, what's the company worth? So most business owners know what their companies are worth to them and their family. It's a gut feel. They know they can make money with it. But trying to assess what is the true value of your business to somebody else, a third party, whether it be a strategic buyer, somebody that's looking to maybe absorb some competition or enter into a new market. These types of things and valuation methods are different depending on who's doing the valuation and the purpose for which they are doing that valuation. So we want to be cognizant of that and understanding whether or not the valuation of your business can support an attractive enough offer to meet the needs of the owners. On the readiness side, this is what we're trying to do now is understand, is my company ready to go to market? I might be ready to sell my company and I might know what the value of my company is to a third party buyer, but is the company really ready to be sold? And what I mean by that, are the processes documented? How you generate business? How do you manage your operations? Are they documented? Are they logical? Are they sequential? Or is it all in your head? So, you know, if it's all in your head, it's going to be hard to get somebody to trade that value for a number that's going to be sufficient enough to do what you need to do. But if it's documented and there's processes in place, it makes the company a lot more attractive to a third-party buyer. I also want to take a look, do it like a legal assessment to make sure there's not any skeletons in the closet from litigation out there or liabilities or things that are out there that could trip up the company in the future. You want to make sure the financials are clean. I would suggest, you know, if you're not doing audited financial statements, now might be a good time to think about it if you want to go to market, because the cleaner your financials are, the easier a transaction is going to fly through the system and the less questions are going to be brought to the forefront as to unexplained things. So you want to make sure you reduce the challenges there. You want to take a look at your market, understand where your market is going. Is it expanding? Is it shrinking? Your production, how do you actually manufacture what you do if you're in manufacturing or bring your services to the forefront, and then your management team. So all these things need to be assessed for readiness. And what you're really trying to do is de-risk the company for a particular buyer. If you can go to a buyer and say, here's all the things that goes into my process, we've got a legal review, our financials are clean, our market is solid, and our production is great, our management team is broad, it reduces a lot of risk, and it also allows the buyer to offer you more money for your company. So on top of that, not only is it ready, but is it attractive from the standpoint of your industry? Are you in an industry that's growing? Is it contracting? Is it shrinking? What's your market penetration amongst your peers? What is your competitive advantage? Do you have an adequate access to the workforce? And are you in a favorable regulatory environment? All these things make the company a lot more attractive for a third-party buyer and also will help you leverage and parlay into a higher valuation for your company. And then lastly, what is your buyer universe? So a minute ago, I said there's options for transitioning your ownership. And we want to make sure that you look at each one of these things before you make a final decision on which way to go. So you can always close your doors and just liquidate everything. It's probably going to be the lowest valuation of your company, depending. And if you're an asset-heavy company in a shrinking industry, that might be the way you have to go. You can gift or sell your business to your family. You can sell to your employees, which now ESOPs are becoming a lot more favorable because of tax advantage selling, which is a whole conversation for another day. Strategic buyers, you can sell to a private equity firm. Sometimes you can sell partial stake in your company, get the equity, grow the company, and sell it again. Or look to go to a family office, which family offices tend to be buy and hold, whereas private equities tend to be buy and flip. So depending on your appetite and your structure and how each one of these different types of buyers would look at your company from an attractiveness standpoint, from a readiness standpoint, from a valuation standpoint, will determine, you know, what type of offers you're going to be getting. Okay, so let's talk about deal structure for a minute. So, you know, deal structures can be different depending on a lot of different factors. Number one, what's the economy doing at the time the offer's coming? So if the economy is strong and the financial industries is out there putting money on the street, you know, you're going to get one type of deal structure. If money's tight, economy's tight, you're going to get a different type of structure. So what you want to take a look at, obviously, is how is the economy performing? What's normal for your industry? And what are the personal factors that you need to be considering in order to make a decision? So from a deal structure standpoint, the best deal structure by far is an all-cash deal. But sometimes buyers get a little bit nervous when they offer all cash. So they may ask the seller to either carry some of the sale proceeds on a note. They may ask you, a lot of times with a private equity buyer, they may ask you to roll up some of your equity with the buyer. And therefore, you know, obviously cash minus equity is what you walked away from the table with. And then the rest is put into the pot with the new owners to try to grow and sell the company for a higher valuation down the road. There may be management / consulting agreements in order to keep you on for a period of time. And typically we see between 1 and 3 years. And normally that doesn't go to the full term. Normally somewhere about midpoint, the seller and the buyer agree that this is probably not the right thing to do on a go-forward basis. And then there's a hybrid structure, which can contain any and all of these different structures in the transaction. So really on the deal structure side, what we're trying to do is help the seller or the owner, our client, de-risk the transaction from their standpoint. Because obviously, if you're taking an all-cash deal, there's a lot less risk involved than if you're taking a deal where you're having to carry some of the paper, or if you're having to contribute some of the equity to the new owners. And then one thing I don't have on this list here, a lot of times we see our earnouts, which are could be a good thing if you have a good, solid company and a reputable buyer. But we've also seen where earnouts end up not ending out very well because there's a lot of opportunity to move things around and make the hurdles even harder to attain. Okay, so once we check the box on the business, I think it's important that, and most of the time, it's not just me, but the industry thinks it's important that we look at the economy, right? So what's going on in the economy can have an impact on how valuable your company is. So you want to look at the economic cycle and where we are. Is the GDP growing, shrinking? Are we in an inflationary period? Are we in a recessionary period? What are commodity prices doing? This affects the cost of raw materials and production. Are you selling globally or just domestically? And if you are selling overseas, do you have currency risk and hedges in place in order to minimize the risk of currency fluctuation? A little bit about labor and the political landscape. So the theme here is really focusing on the macro. But if you follow along with me here, a lot of what we're talking about kind of bleeds from one category to the other. So the economy affects structure, affects pricing, affects valuations. It affects the owner's personal requirements, et cetera. But we're trying to break this down into segments where we can go through the process and make a good decision here. the old economy cycle from business school. I just threw that in here just to see, you know, the economy goes through these peaks and valleys all the time, but different industries actually go through different peaks and valleys at different times. So, you know, one industry might be at the top any given time, and at the same time, a sister industry could be at the trough. So depending on the economy on a macro level is one thing, but looking at where your particular industry is within that macro level will give us another set of data points to consider. Okay, industry trends. What's the regulatory environment for your particular industry? Is the labor supply good or bad for your particular industry? What about supply chain issues, market channels, onshore, offshore manufacturing, your competition, and technology? All these things really need to be addressed. And again, thinking about de-risking for the buyer, if you have a situation where you're checking all the boxes here, this will help you get a better valuation for your company and maybe a transaction that comes together a little quicker. And then lastly, we need money to make these deals work. So what's the capital markets looking like at the time of your sale? What's the money supply? What's the bank lending appetite? Where interest rates heading up or down? What type of financing terms are available? And are there alternative sources of financing? We're seeing more and more non-bank lenders coming into the deal to make it happen as opposed to traditional banking. A lot of times traditional banking is kind of capping out, and the void is being filled either by private equity or by non-bank lenders. So it's really important to make sure that we understand where we are in the process of getting money flowing to the particular buyers in order to get us our transaction and make sure it closes. Okay, you've checked the box on the business, checked the box on the economy. Now let's talk a little bit about personal. So, you know, it's the inevitable fact that we're all getting older, right? So as owners of businesses continue to age, there's more and more of a probability of a transition of ownership at some point sooner rather than later. And the biggest problem is a lot of owners are very, very good at doing what they're doing. They know how to make money with their company, but when it comes time to walk away from the business, trade the keys in for a big pile of cash, the concern is, what do I do with that money once this transaction happens? And one of the scariest things, at least in my professional lifetime, is living through the 2008 Great Credit Crisis. So unfortunately, if you sold your business in mid to late 2007, and then you started to live off your portfolio in 2008 and the market drops 50%, what you're doing now is you're pulling capital out of a shrinking pool of funds, which really shrank very, very rapidly. And then when the market recovered, you had less to live on for the rest of your life. So, you know, planning for retirement in a turbulent economy is quite challenging. And it's one of the things we try to help model out for our clients as we work with them in this decision process. Maximizing the monetization of your company is really important because obviously the more money you can walk away from the table with, the easier it's going to be to hit all your personal goals and objectives from a financial standpoint. Another thing is more psychological than financial, but being able to live with going from total control to having no control, having total control of your business to having no control over how the markets are going to treat your capital once it's invested, and also being able to separate who you are from what you do. You know, your personal life after retirement is a key component of happiness, and it's one of the things that a lot of people don't think about as deeply as they should prior to the transaction. Really important to figure out and model to make sure we can replicate your cash flow. What I basically say is reproducing your paycheck from your assets as opposed to from your business. And that's a whole nother conversation, but as business owners, we all know there are things we run through our companies that will probably have to be paid out of our pocket once we sell the company. Healthcare costs is a big concern as well for people that are retiring. If you're under 65, you got to find a nice, affordable way to manage that. We talked a little bit about unsolicited offers, and then we have to be concerned about asset allocation, picking the right mix of investments to support your lifestyle, sequencing the risk of timing of cash flows coming out of the portfolio, and making sure we're not making emotional decisions or behavioral mistakes with our funds. All right, so we talked business, economy, a little bit about yourself. You know, what's your time horizon? So are you within 1 year of making an exit? Are you within 3 to 5 years? Are you with 5 years or more? The reason why I bring this up is because depending on how much time you have between today and the time you actually expect to walk away from your business, will determine the level and how complex of planning we can do on the front end to make a more smoother transaction on the back end. Having a financial plan is key. My thesis is you really should start with this, and I'm kind of getting the cart before the horse here. We really need to understand what we have to work with from a personal financial standpoint so that when we figure out what the net after-tax effect of us transitioning our business for, you know, sum of money, is that going to be adequate to address all the goals and needs and objectives we have from a personal financial standpoint? So starting with the strategic wealth assessment is key. Understanding what we have to work with today, liquidity outside the business, other investments outside the business, potential after-tax value of a transaction if we sell the business. What is our starting point? And then what are we trying to accomplish over the rest of our lives? Creating a wealth model, doing a holistic balance sheet analysis, as I said, looking at all assets, not just the business assets, but everything we've accumulated throughout our life that has monetary value, and understanding what our personal cash flow needs will be and creating a projection so that we can see if these things line up or not. Life and long-term care issues are another thing we need to talk about. As we live longer, we tend to have more health problems as we get older. And one of the biggest ways to blow up a retirement plan is for one or two of the spouses to need long-term care coverage sometime in the future. And we'll talk about that in a second. Not only do you need to have kind of a roadmap for your financial situation, but you also have to have the ability to stress test that for sequential risk. And what I mean by that is taking a look at how your investment structure would work in various economic situations. So it's really great to say, hey, if I retire, I'm going to get the average S&P return over a rolling 10-year period is about 10%. So I'm going to get 10% of my money every single year for the rest of my life. Well, we know that's not going to happen like that. Some years we're going to be up more than 10%. Some years we're going to be down more than 10%. Some years we're going to be negative. So we want to make sure we look at the effect of all these different potential returns in the overall market. But we also want to look at sequencing these returns to see what would happen if the worst part of the market happened in the first year or two of retirement versus the last year or two of retirement. Integrating with a tax plan, we talked a little bit about that earlier, but also integrating with estate planning to minimize estate taxation, wealth preservation, and then of course you have to have a mechanism to reevaluate and adjust from year to year because things change. Just a really quick comment on long-term care. This slide was provided to me by our friends at Lincoln Financial, who are one of our partners in long-term care insurance. And I thought it was kind of interesting to see a 10-hour per day home health aide registered nurse costs about $161,000 annually. And this is kind of a national average. Your state, it might be a little higher, a little lower than that. But if you were to inflate that at 3.5% for the next 23 years, why they did 23 instead of 20, I don't know. But that 161 would look like $354,000 23 years from now. And if that person needed care for 4 years, it could easily be over $1.4 or $1.5 million for that period of time. Multiply that times two if both husband and wife end up needing care in the future. So that could be a very significant bite out of your retirement plan. We want to make sure we take that into consideration when we're talking about preparing people to exit their company. Tax planning, of course, there's a number of different levers we can pull or we can put in place to help reduce taxation. Creating a donor advised fund or personal family foundation, if you're charitably inclined, in the year that you have a transaction or a sale of your business, that helps offset some of the taxes you're going to have to pay on the capital gains side of the equation. Gifting shares before the sale is another technique that you can move shares out of your ownership to kids or trusts or charities before the transaction occurs, before there's valuations done for the purpose of a sell, so that you can move that appreciation out of your tax purview. You can also look at installment sales, taking an assessment of where you have your state of residency. And there's a number of investing strategies we can utilize from a tax reduction standpoint, such as direct indexing or tax loss harvesting, just to name a few. Again, everything we're talking about today, we could definitely go into further conversation down the road. On top of tax planning, we need to take a look at estate planning. And hopefully everybody on this call today understands that we have some tax breaks that are going to expire at the end of next year unless something changes between now and then, primarily on the estate side. So we want to make sure that we have enough time to actually maximize our exemptions before those go away. A lot of times what we'll do is we'll help a client create a flow chart. We'll take a look at their estate plans to make sure they're consistent with what they think they are. A lot of times, in fact, we were just visiting with a client last week, has a plan that was created a number of years ago. Family dynamics have changed a lot. So the flow of assets after the death of the owners is basically going to be different than what it needs to be today. So we want to make sure that even if you have an estate plan that's, you know, a couple years old, we want to review that to make sure that it's still pertinent to your current situation. And then most of our clients that are going through the sale of a company are going to have a significant estate issue if proper planning is not done on the front end. Creating trusts and special needs trust, spendthrift trust for dependents, shifting the tax burdens from a high tax bracket to a low tax bracket, utilizing private placement strategies to reduce the annual taxation of investments inside those strategies, creating spousal lifetime annuity trusts, and what we're really trying to do is protect assets from in-laws, outlaws, and opportunists. So, you know, if we utilize the trust laws correctly, we can help shelter against divorce, lawsuits, and opportunists. And we want to make sure we, whatever we do, we can protect all the hard work you've did to monetize your company. We want to make sure it doesn't get unjustly taken for having bad decisions in the process there. And then lastly, creative insurance strategies. There's a number of things we can do with insurance that will help leverage transfer of assets to that next generation and the generation that follows. We talked a little bit about crucial timing, just real quick, getting back to the estate point I made a minute ago. Most sellers on this call would have an estate issue. The exemptions are scheduled to sunset at the end of next year, which means what we could transfer, about $14 million, will go down to $5.6 million. Why is that important? Well, it's not going to save you on income tax, but it will definitely save you, your family, on estate inheritance tax in the future. And if we don't use it now, we'll lose it if these exemptions go back to their smaller base. So life after exit, again, I said separating who you are from what you do, understanding whether or not this is your last transaction you're going to be doing or if you're going to be doing another deal. If you're going to fully retire, where are you going to find value and relevance? Is it going to be family? Is it going to be community? Or are you going to be planning for other types of activities to keep yourself occupied after you sell your company? Okay, so what happens if the decision is not now? Maybe we're going to have to push this off into the future. What kind of things can we be helping you with or decisions to help you make as you continue to run your company, grow your valuation, and potentially sell in the future? Just a couple things I'll throw out there for you to think about. Business optimization through cash management, specialty financing, more efficient use of credit card strategies, taking a look at enhancing 401k and profit sharing. I've seen a lot of plans that are dated that have very inefficient investments inside the 401k and maybe not fully utilizing the profit sharing opportunities. And a very cool strategy that some people know about, but not a lot of people take advantage of, and that's the cash balance opportunity, the cash balance plan. In essence, a cash balance plan allows owners to discriminate from an ERISA standpoint, and depending on age, to sock away a lot more tax-deferred money than just a 401k and or profit sharing. And just, this chart just gives you a couple different things to think about. A 35-year-old owner will max out with $23,000 in a 401k only, but if you add profit share on top of that, you can get up to $69,000. If you throw a cash balance plan on top of that, at their age, they could pull out another $90,000 from the company for a total of $159,000. And there is obviously tax benefits for doing that to the company and also deferral for the owner. And this estimate is a $71,000 tax benefit to the company. But let's just say that particular owner is 60. We'll go up to that top level there, and you'll see that combined all three, cash balance, 401k, profit sharing, the owner can take out a $396,500 under the structure, which is significantly more and will help pull assets away from the company and put it on the personal balance sheet of the owners while you're still running the business and maximizing your tax deferrals. Just one idea there. Additionally, reducing risk through captive insurance companies, risk retention, tax advantage, wealth accumulation strategy, buy-sell agreements, key man insurance, etc. So again, just recapping, generally it's you thinking about selling your business, and the economy, and the personal wealth strategies usually come in after the fact. My thesis is if there's a way to be more optimal on the way we can help maximize the personal wealth of owners as they monetize their business so they can make better decisions with respect to how and when they exit, sell, retire, we want to help you do that. My thesis is we turn this whole process around. Let's first look at the personal side. As an owner of a company thinking about retiring, let's figure out what it is we need from a personal standpoint. The decision to sell, retire, or exit should only be made after a thorough analysis of your personal financial situation has been determined for what after-tax liquidity is actually required in order to meet all your goals and objectives. Next, we'll look at valuation to determine if there is sufficient value of the company and its current position to attract a legitimate buyer that is willing and able to provide you the value for your company that you require to meet your objectives. And then finally, is the market and the economic factors favorable for you to execute that transaction now? First steps in exit planning should be the personal planning side. So the financial goal assessment, as we talked about a few minutes ago, is helping you assess your current pre-sale resources, defining and articulating what your goals and objectives are to determine what the after-tax liquidity is going to be required under various transaction types and deal structures, and within different parameters of the economy and different factors of the markets to actually meet your goals and to make sure to the best of our ability that you're not going to die broke and you're going to have enough money to take care of all the goals and objectives you have and to leave a legacy for your family and those causes that you feel passionate about. Through this process, we could build a year-by-year cash flow model and take a look at different tax mitigation strategies and integrate with your estate plan to protect the exemption limits and stress test multiple scenarios to see what the probability of successfully reaching your outcomes are. Here's just a couple examples of some of the reports that we would create, you know, a balance sheet, doing a Monte Carlo analysis, which is basically randomization of sequences of returns and withdrawals, and taking a look at how each one of these structures would impact your financial situation. From an estate standpoint, creating a flow chart to show the disposition of assets to make sure that we have the right people getting the right amounts of assets, not necessarily having to be equal, but fair, then that's a whole conversation. And then grading each one of these strategies to see which is going to give you the highest probability of successfully meeting your financial goals and objectives. And here's an example of a year-by-year cash flow, et cetera. When we talk to clients about managing money, we do talk about asset allocation, but only in the sense of what is the strategic purpose of your money. First and foremost, we feel like creating liquidity for day-to-day lifestyle needs is important. We want to try to do that without having to rely on the ups and downs of the market. So there's constant liquidity and cash flow. To create a cash flow model to replicate that paycheck you're getting from your company. Once we build that in, we're going to look at longevity to make sure we have the right amount of money invested in the correct mix of assets so that hopefully you will not outlive it and that you would have growth in excess of inflation after taxes. And then after we check those two boxes, we're going to say what's left over for the future for those people and causes that we're passionate about. How can we improve the lives of other people when we're gone? And we're going to take more of an endowment approach and look at investing over the long run there as well. So for the business valuation, conducting a readiness survey, assessing options for transferring ownership, engaging an experienced investment banker if you need help finding a buyer for your company. These are all things that our team can help you with in the process of evaluating your thoughts about whether or not it's the right time and how you would want to actually exit the company. Real quick, the business valuation we do is for discussion purposes and for planning purposes. It's not a valuation you would take to the market or stand up in court if there's litigation between shareholders, but it is a 29-page report that we give you various different scenarios and KPIs so that you can use that information for financial planning from a personal standpoint as well. Our business exit and succession assessment worksheet we take our clients through And then it's a multi-point checklist of things that we consider in the whole discussion about, is your company ready to go to market and would it be attractive to maximize offers in that market as well? For those that are looking for help finding a buyer, we do have an exclusive network of investment bankers and private equity firms we work with, primarily in the middle market area. It's a very tight and hard to get on list. It's curated by a specialty team that focuses on client satisfaction. We want to make sure that whoever we bring to the table has a history of getting deals done, closing deals without retrading transactions and without any hidden fees. So these are all things we do pre and post transaction surveys of both the members of our list and also our clients to go through this process to make sure that they are happy with the results that they received as going through this process. Thought leadership, a number of articles I've written personally, the firm puts out, you know, everything from key considerations to selling your business to going through successful succession planning, et cetera. And if you're interested in any of these articles, just let me know. I'll be happy to email them to you. So just as a quick recap, from a macro standpoint, we want to make sure we talk about it. Economic variables, global versus domestic, political, legal environment, industrial, the industry specifics, banking, lending, capital markets, et cetera. And then the next step, obviously, bumping up against the hard hour break here. But I do want to talk about, I know I covered a lot very quickly. There's a lot of things we could go in deeper with. If you are contemplating a transaction, or I noticed there's also some advisors on the call as well. If any of your clients are contemplating a transaction, please, by all means, have them give me a call or give me a call directly. I'd love to talk to you in a lot more detail about the things we went over today. Maybe talk about some examples of how we've helped clients in specific situations maximize valuations and build portfolios to support their families' financial needs for multiple generations. Why UBS? Talked a little bit about that as well. We are one of the largest wealth management firms on the planet. We're financially solid. We just acquired Credit Suisse last year. We have a very strong balance sheet. We have $5 trillion of assets invested and a $45 billion capital reserve. So we are a very solid company. And as I said, we do a lot of business with owners of businesses and are the recipient of a number of excellent awards from private banking to Euro money management, et cetera. So very reputable firm. Our particular division here, the business transition consulting team, we focus primarily on working with owners of closely held family-owned businesses in that middle market space. And if you chose to work with us, what you can expect is personalization for your specific need, specialization, whether on my team directly or through our expanded network of advisors within our firm. We would definitely bring the right people to the conversation to customize a solution for you and your clients and to collaborate not only with you, but also with your outside advisors as well. So a number of other resources we have available, but in summary, I would just say if you're considering retiring or selling within the next 1 to 5 years, we should talk. If you want to talk through the different options for discreetly bringing your company to market, if you're interested in maximizing your after-tax results from the sale of your business or concerned about the continuation of your enterprise after you leave, and more specifically worried about building and protecting family wealth and leaving a meaningful legacy for those people you care about, we should definitely arrange a conversation. Feel free to reach out to me. Everybody on this call certainly would provide a one-hour consultation. We could talk a little bit more detail about your specific needs and how we could be a part of that. And then there's our phone number and email address. And you can, if you want to take a look at our website, you can just click that code as well. So we're just a few minutes shy of 1 hour, and I want to make sure we kind of wrap up here. Went a little longer than anticipated. Any specific questions you might have, or if there's any scenarios we might be able to come in and consult with you on, please do not hesitate to reach out and let us know. And with that, I'd like to thank everybody for your time this afternoon. Hopefully you found value in this, and if we could be of any additional assistance, please do not hesitate to reach out. Thank you so much, and have a great afternoon.
This podcast is presented for informational purposes only and should not be relied upon as investment advice or the basis for making any investment decisions. It does not constitute an offer to sell or a solicitation of an offer to buy any specific product or service. UBS does not provide legal or tax advice, and we would recommend listeners to obtain appropriate independent professional advice. Some of the views and opinions expressed may not be those of UBS Group AG or its affiliates. UBS Financial Services Inc. offers investment advisory services in its capacity as an SEC registered investment advisor and brokerage services in its capacity as an SEC registered broker dealer. These services are separate and distinct, differ in material ways, and are governed by different laws and separate arrangements. It is important that you understand the ways in which we conduct business and that you carefully read the agreements and disclosures that we provide about the products or services we offer. For more information, please review client relationship summary provided at ubs.com/relationship summary. UBS Financial Services Inc. is a subsidiary of UBS Group AG and is a member of FINRA and SIPC.